Hello, and welcome to That Tech Pod, where we discuss all things e-discovery, data privacy, cybersecurity, and tech innovation. I'm Kevin Albert, and I feel like I have a decent knowledge of tech.
And I'm Laura Milstein, and I don't know that much about technology.
And that's why each week we are talking to heavy hitters in the industry to help us break down these topics. Laura, who are you talking to today?
Today we are talking to Fiona Campbell. Fiona leads the e-discovery practice at Field Fisher, a multinational law firm headquartered in London. She provides commercial and strategic advice to both individuals and corporate entities across a range of business landscapes, industries, and sectors on litigation and alternative dispute resolution. Prior to joining Field Fisher, Fiona worked at a U.S. law firm and as an in-house counsel at a number of London-based global consultancies. Fiona has focused on e-discovery since qualifying as a lawyer, having previously been a barrister and also an in-house counsel focusing on combining law with technology to effectively manage high-profile disputes. Fiona is also an accredited mediator. Fiona, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Awesome. If you don't mind, could you give us a little bit more detail on your background? Could you tell us how you got here?
Of course. So I am a lawyer practicing in the commercial litigation department of Field Fisher in London. Field Fisher is a law firm with offices predominantly throughout Europe, but we also have a Silicon Valley office in the US, and we have presence in China as well. I qualified as a lawyer 18 years ago. And about 12 years ago, I got thrown into a massive e-discovery matter that I really was unprepared for. So as a result, I started learning the ropes, learning forensics, and combining law and tech, and it brought me to where I am today.
You know, the last time I saw you in real time was in London, like 3 years ago, and you were saying that you were having a child? Maybe
that was in Dublin 4 years ago. Yeah, that was at a conference. So Kevin and I were on a panel together.
Yeah, and what we were Ireland. Talking.
Yes, that was right. It. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Kev, you were. Yeah.
And so what we were talking about then was how to harness e-discovery tools to address data subject access requests, any kind of data breach work. Stuff that a lot of law firms and I suppose organizations hadn't really thought about at the time. That was, I think, 4.5 years ago.
Yeah, you're always ahead of the curve.
Always ahead of the curve, that's it. But I guess what we had set up at the time was a practice run and a roadmap of how to do it effectively. Because what was being done at the time was that a lot of organizations were taking data, they were reviewing it, redacting it, they were also paying hosting charges for a compliance matter, which no one really needed to do, because what needed to be done in terms of the law was just to kind of spit out a CSV to say, look, this is the data we hold, these are the repositories in which it's held, this is the file name for each data source, and there you go, we're lawfully processing it. So, I suppose a way of aligning the law and the tech to effectively meet what clients needed to do.
Do you think they do yet? I mean, it's been like 4 years since you were ahead of the curve, and now everything is still crazy. I think being ahead of tech is so hard because you're ahead of it one day and then the next day it's like years above you, and then you're chasing it and then all of a sudden you're ahead of it again. Where do you think we are now when it comes to e-discovery and tech? Yeah, so there's a lot.
You know what, I completely agree. And I think a lot of it is to be responsive and just to manipulate what tools we have to work with whatever tech is available at the time, because it's constantly evolving. So Kevin and I had a conversation a few weeks back, and we were talking about a lot of the technology tools out there are forward thinking. You know, they're cloud-based, they're talking about integrating mobile devices or external devices so they can be easily dragged and dropped in, or they can be dropped in via some kind of cloud source. But what we were discussing was that a lot of the time, the devices we're addressing in any kind of form of litigation are legacy devices. And there are a lot of vendors who are getting rid of the ability to deal with this kind of data, whilst a lot of the actual platform providers are addressing something which is a bit futuristic. It's not in the present. So if we're dealing with the present, hold on to the tools that are needed. Use those now. So for the next 5, 6, 7 years, say, there's going to be a need to deal with old mobile data, old computers, obsolete systems. Make sure you have the ability to do that, because there may come to a point that you're the only person out there in the market doing that because everybody else has moved into the future.
Yeah, I'm amazed at how often we still deal with Lotus Notes files. Forever, there was a big push in the industry where people were trying to figure out, like, how do we work like structured data analytics and things like that, dealing with like the Peachtree systems and a lot of the accounting systems. And then all of a sudden, everybody's just like, we don't need to worry about that anymore. And they just kind of moved on. And yet people are still dealing with those type of things and dealing with those every day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly. It's just amazing to me. Like, I mean, again, obviously the generative AI and all these things are really cool and it's fascinating, but it's going to be another 5 years before we really have to deal with that in e-discovery standpoint, where it seems to be very cyclical, but you're right. It definitely looks back, seems like at least 5 years, maybe even more like 10 years.
I completely agree. And I think even in 10 years' time, because everything is evolving daily, it's evolving by the minute. What we have now in terms of ChatGPT and everything else is going to be so much more sophisticated. And I think the e-disclosure tools, sorry, that's the English term, the e-discovery tools themselves will be sophisticated enough to really, really cleverly deal with everything in the environment. Because I think now, with the likes of new ChatGPT available software within database environments, they're not fine-tuned enough, they're not quick enough, they're not really able to look at, you know, what the issues and proceedings are and then drill down and provide that effectively. They still need to be trained a lot. And I guess, you know, one of the other issues is, how clever are these going to be? I mean, is this information that is purely residing within a client environment? Is it being shared? If it is being shared, what are the commercial and sensitive risks associated with that? Have you guys been doing anything lately about that?
It's been interesting to kind of see. I mean, it seems like a lot of these companies have trained data on very publicly available information, but also some information that's not publicly available. There's a lawsuit that's going on right now. I saw like Sarah Silverman, the comedian, she's suing OpenAI and she's suing Meta because they basically like found like a bootleg copy of her book. And there's a whole bunch of other publishers out there who have done the same, where basically books have been sucked in and used as training material. And so now there's a whole bunch of copyright lawsuits against all these different companies because the training material that you're using to, you know, train the system isn't necessarily publicly available information. And so it's more so than just using a collective pool of information. It's using information that they shouldn't really have.
But also, I guess my concern is, how are they improving the system? So for legal matters specifically, you're going to have very unique facts. And if you're using those unique facts to train a system, it's only going to get more sophisticated the more you put in. So is that client data or is it within an environment? How clever can an environment get if it's locked down to that particular data set? It's just, I guess, you know, if we're thinking futuristically, we need to know where the algorithm will go to be trained enough to also be secure.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a really good question. I think right now nobody really knows the answer to that because nobody really knows how to deal with it. I agree. If they could come up with a system where it could be, you know, learning off the collective information of a law firm, for example, where everything is, you know, you assume privacy passing back and forth between the firm itself is secure enough. But you're right. Once this goes to Amazon or goes to Google Cloud and you're intermixing different companies, different law firms' information, all of a sudden that becomes really a big problem.
Yeah, completely agree.
I'm also thinking of like the laws around it. So more technology, more laws, and you have to be able to factor what's legal. What's your example, Kevin, even with Sarah Silverman, like to another side to that, I bought this book, I paid for it, I own it. Am I not allowed to take the information I gained? It's not putting, here is an exact copy of the book. So I think there's like fine lines that you have to figure out. What is really your fault? What is really, can you blame tech? Do you blame the people behind the tech? Do you blame the users in tech? And so there's just so much change happening. With that being said, Fiona, are you seeing, when it comes to e-discovery specific, are you noticing a trend of more law firms that are saying, we want to bring in a platform like Relativity or one of those in-house. Are you saying more that they don't want to bring it in-house because they want to be able to use a variety of platforms? So they're going more with vendors that have a variety of platforms? Or are you noticing the trend is more building your own in-house and not having to pay a vendor or a platform because you realize that you can build and have your own in-house proprietary hosting and reviewing and processing engine inside? What are you seeing as the trend in your side?
So trends in the UK will depend on the firm. So what we have seen is that a lot of the bigger firms tend to have their own e-discovery units, and they will take their own tech in-house and they'll have their own tech teams. How they set it up, whether it's on a separate P&L, whether they've set up a separate area within the business for a company status, I don't really know, because it's going to depend specifically on each firm. Now, I think whilst that is an attractive setup to have, what a lot of other firms prefer to have is, from a risk perspective, is to actually work with vendors. And working with vendors is beneficial in that the vendors are responsible for the tech, they provide the consultancy, they provide the manpower, they look after the updates, you know, they're quick to turn around. My firm, we hold ourselves out as experts in the law. We don't say we're experts in technology. Whilst we have technical abilities, we like to hand it over to someone who does really supposed to have that level of expertise.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I also think using the vendor, for me, in my opinion, it kind of allows you to try different softwares. One of the things that I do struggle with a lot of the vendors now is they're very focused on, here's the product, but they don't always want to have the people to be able to use it. And I think you have to really factor, does your staff know how to use, maintain, and PM each software that you're bringing in? And I don't like that that's happening a lot in the industry. I understand that as a, you know, e-discovery company, you want to make as much revenue as possible, but you could have the best product ever. In all reality, if you don't have people able to use it and maintain it and help your clients, it doesn't matter that it's good. It becomes a bad product simply because you don't have that. Is that something that you're noticing on your side?
For sure. As you were actually saying that, Laura, I was thinking of the age-old idiom, a bad workman always blames the tools. So whilst you can have amazing tools, you need to have people who are trained on those tools. Not only should they be able to work the tools from A to Z, but they also should be able to provide consultancy around what the best mode of absolutely achieving something is. So whilst you can do something in the correct manner, there might be quick ways of doing it. There might be more effective ways of doing it. And I think that often is the sell from e-discovery companies. It's the ability not only to know how the tech works, but to fine-tune the processes around that tech.
And do you see that the firms themselves are staying ahead in terms of being able to speak? As you mentioned, you know, you're focused on the law side of it, and obviously we're focused on the tech side of it. Are you seeing that the laws are changing so fast that you really need to kind of compartmentalize that way? And are you seeing things differencing, you know, in terms of laws between the EU and the UK now that, you know, we're post-Brexit and things are really separating?
I think whilst the laws have changed, it doesn't really affect how technology changes, because technology is so malleable, you can work it around what the laws and what the requirements are. And the laws don't strictly say that technology has to be a very specific way. More so what the laws would say, it would recommend the use of technology, but it doesn't recommend what methodologies are necessarily needed.
You have a least favorite technology platform? You don't have to say which one it is. I'm just wondering if you have one.
I do have one. And if this is recorded and there's no video footage, I could gesticulate who it might be.
You don't have to. We won't put you on the spot. I'm just wondering. I think a lot of people have like that one company that they're like, bad experience here. So what is your reason for that? Was it experience with the company? Was it the actual product? Did you feel like you were oversold? And the reason that I ask this is just to give a little background is we talk to so many people, and I've noticed a trend of people that will say, I thought it was so cool. It looked really pretty. The aesthetics of it were amazing. They really upsold me on how they were the next best thing in A, B, and C areas. But then as soon as I signed the contract, it was like I didn't know what to do. And I then had a product that I realized wasn't getting updates, and they would constantly say, the next update will be released, should be done by the end of the year, as an example, and then it wouldn't come, or then it would come like 2 years later, and they were getting frustrated with that. So that's just an example of things we keep hearing. And so I'm curious, your perspective, is there a reason? Is it similar to that? Or did you just hate
it? Yeah. You know what? I wouldn't say it's the product. I think it's holistic. I think it's the product. I think it was the team who sold the product. And I think it was the available tech support within that team when we used the product. So the experience we had on this particular platform is that we were sold an all singing, all dancing platform. The whole team was walked through a demo telling, you know, if it can do X, Y, and Z, you know, it's so forward thinking that it has, you know, ChatGPT embedded and, you know, can just spit out whatever you want. And when we actually used it, we were limited to the actual ability of the platform. Not only were we limited, but the tech team was unresponsive. If we asked them to do certain things, they didn't do it properly, or else it wasn't effectively done. There was no one to actually fine-tune what needed to be done. And that just made us quite frustrated, because it meant that everything had to be done with a lot of kind of manpower on our side in order to reach certain court deadlines. And it put us under a lot of pressure. So that resulted in us steering away from using that vendor another time. And I wouldn't say, you know, that the product per se was a bad product. I just think the whole package and the way it was sold didn't provide a level of service that we needed as a law firm.
Yeah, we see that a lot in this industry, unfortunately, is that the marketing people are talking about one thing and the actual support people are doing something completely different. Being on the inside, you know, it was one of those things where I was always like, you're watching a demo of our team going like, wait, it can't really actually do that. What are you talking about? Don't say that. And we're the ones who actually have to then, you know, support the clients on it. So having been in that chair, I'm like always, you know, it kills me. So when you say that, I definitely know what you're talking about for sure. But it's one of the problems with these tools, right? Everybody is trying to stay ahead and trying to be the next Relativity or be the next forward-thinking platform and all that. And so oftentimes they're like building the car as it's racing down the hill. And so that just leads to somebody's like, oh, let's make this tool do this. And they're just introducing a new bug into the platform, you know, unnecessarily or, you know, unintentionally, but it happens a fair amount.
And you know what? Most platforms do the same, right? They're hosting your documents, you're tagging your documents and reviewing them. Some of them or some don't offer TAR, which is all great. But what is most beneficial to any law firm is the strategy that a consultancy can provide around the platform. Because the platform doesn't really matter, we're agnostic as to what platform we use. What we want is the Rolls-Royce service. How do we do this best? How do we do it the quickest way? How do we save money? And how do we do it in line with what the courts want? And that's really what the attraction is when we choose who we work with.
Yeah. And I saw that when, you know, living in Ireland, it was interesting because you see a lot of, in the US, there's a very like robust lit support department in a lot of law firms, where in Ireland, at least from my experience, there wasn't really that role as well defined. The lawyers were really focused on doing their work. The paralegals were doing their work. But there wasn't really a combination of that sort of technology legal mindset as much as there is, I think, in the US. And so there's a lot of firms where they were really looking for us to provide that for them. And, you know, my background, I think I did pretty well with that. But there were a lot of times we're having conversations, we're talking to folks where it was amazing, you know, that they were just like, you got to give us the insight. You got to tell us what to do and just provide that level of, exactly right. Provide us that guidance. It wasn't that there wasn't the knowledge base. It was just there wasn't really the same background. There wasn't really people who've been doing it the same amount. And so I definitely thought
Kevin's
that was interesting.
Kevin is bitter because when we were over there, there were so many people that would be like, do you have a DSAR solution? And every time Kevin would be like, I'm supposed to say yes.
Exactly. The answer always was yes. The answer is it doesn't matter what the tool can or cannot do. We can do everything. And so there's a lot of times we were just like, of course we do.
Can't do that. I can't do that. I want to be that person. But every time I'm like, can it? Sure. I mean, anything can be done.
The point is it could.
Exactly. Oftentimes the tools can.
You know, you could spit something out in a CSV the way you had it structured. The tool, I've used your database.
Yeah.
The tool was set up in such a manner that you had your fields, you could select your fields, you could get what you want. So yes, the answer is yes. It's no different to what the quote unquote bespoke DSAR solutions offer.
Yeah, the problem was that people, you know, explaining to people what a DSAR is and understanding that you can do it if you know what you're talking about. And so the problem we often found was that people didn't know really what to say. And so the answer was, of course it was. And then we'll just figure it out as it go. And it happened to be that we could do it. But you certainly don't want to find out in midstream, well, we said we could, but that we can't really do it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But, you know, that's the strategy piece. That you're using the tools to be able to provide the result to the client. How it's done, as long as it's done correctly with an auditable trail and proper methodologies, means you've done it. Gold star.
I think I really appreciate in your position that you understand both sides. So you have both the legal aspect and the tech aspect of e-discovery, where a lot of times you don't always have that. So you either have a frustrated e-discovery company that's saying, this is what this is, and maybe the lawyer's not really understanding, and they're like, no, but this is what I need for the client. And the e-discovery company saying, that's exactly what we're saying we offer, but they don't always align on the same path, or they don't always understand how they intersect. So I think you having both sides is extremely desirable in this industry because you can see both sides. And with that, I wanted to ask you if you have any horror stories. And this could be with a client, this could be with a platform, this could be completely irrelevant. It could just be about, you know, one time when we asked this to a person in cyber and she told us a story about driving and a car accident and it was crazy. It wasn't about cyber, but it was a crazy story. So you can go, you know,
I do have horror stories. I have many, 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 many horror stories. But I think one that springs to mind is a lot of the time what we like to do are provide very specific instructions to the vendors we're working with. And this is about how we want things uploaded, well, even pre-upload, how they should be processed and so on. But there's one particular matter, and again, everyone shall be anonymous in this horror story, but it cost the client so much more than was necessary. So for example, all embedded items were extracted and things like, you know, little Twitter icons or email signatures were treated as individual documents. So then you have like close to 500,000 individual documents that aren't then taken out of the pool. You know, what could have been done is that you run a search on the volume, the data size of that file, and you could have suppressed it. And there were just really simple things like, you know, the TAR models weren't set up right and they were just ineffective. Elution tests weren't being conducted enough. And it just meant that we ended up paying for this database and for this service a lot longer than was needed. And whilst we kept the client fully apprised and the client was happy to go along in that manner, I thought if we got a better service, if we got the kind of the proper effective consultative service from the vendor, that wouldn't have happened.
I'm going to take a minute. You work in a London-based firm. You're in the UK, but prior to that, you have experience working for US firms. Do you feel, and maybe it's very different now than, you know, your experience at that point, because tech is constantly changing, but do you feel that either the US or the UK, one was more advanced when it came to e-discovery tech? Do you feel that the issues that you had in one were very different, or was it very much the same?
Very much the same. And again, this is where it comes down to the people. The only difference, the tech is the same, because most of the tech we use, whether it's US-based or UK-based, they're the same systems. And it comes down to who is providing you with that service, who knows the rules, who knows how things should be effective. So I think, you know, the main differentiating factor were the people, irrespective of whether they were US-based or UK-based.
Heard it here first. It blame yourself. Yeah. If you're listening, it's you. It's not your product. It's you.
Up, Laura.
Exactly. That's right. Do you have any advice for our listeners? Do you have anything you could recommend we should be looking out for?
Well, one thing I think is very attractive, and often when we do choose to go with a vendor, it's who thought about what the pain is. So when we go to a vendor and say, look, this is the litigation at hand, this is what we want to achieve. And when vendors come back, even if it's very basic, but with a roadmap and some form of basic strategy. So if they are thinking about strategizing to actually set it up, set the matter up in a manner to achieve results within a time frame, we will go with them because it shows that they're structured, that they're thinking about managing, whereas other vendors just want to throw all of the data into a platform and get on with it without actually having a roadmap in place. So I would say plan it out, very basic, doesn't have to be anything more than a page. And that, again, is a massive differentiator.
Awesome.
Same advice I give to anyone who's going on a trip. Plan it out. Make better choices. It's worth it in the end.
Roadmap.
Yeah.
No road rage.
Roadmap for everything in life. It does make a difference. So I love it. Great advice. You have been really great, a little traumatizing, but also like very helpful at the same time, which are my favorite episodes, the ones where after I get a little bit of nightmares, but also in a hopeful way. And I think that's what our audience can take from this today. But if you're listening and you just got the nightmares, sorry.
Well, am I Freddy Krueger?
No, in a positive way. Anyone who comes on to talk about e-discovery is kind of Freddy Krueger, though, you have to say. It is one of those topics that you just say, we're going to talk about e-discovery, and I'm automatically like, in what way?
You know? There's a lot of boogeyman out there, you know?
Yeah.
No, you have to get a name, like the Hamburglar of e-discovery, whomever that could be. You call it Chip.
Oh, yeah. You could do that. We're going to start telling people that's you, so... Careful.
Thanks.
Well, with that said, thank you so much for coming on today. You have been amazing. Thanks so much, Fiona.
Thank you both.
So, Kevin, we just spoke with Fiona Campbell, the e-discovery practice lead at Field Fisher. What were your tech takeaways?
I thought this was a good episode. I thought we deal with a lot of AI. We deal with a lot of, you know, conversations relating to very futuristic tech. And I thought her perspective on the fact that we're leaving a lot of firms behind is really interesting. And so for me, that was definitely something you don't think about a lot, but it definitely makes a lot of sense to me. And so I'm pleased that we were able to talk about it. And I definitely think it's an interesting point.
Yeah, I think we have a lot of boring e-discovery episodes, not because of our guests, but because e-discovery can be boring. And I really like that she didn't make me feel like this is another e-discovery episode that's boring. I also like just like her as a person. She's very intelligent and yet humble. I think in an industry like this, it's very, one, there's a lot more men in the industry, which I'm not hating on men. I'm just saying it happens to be more male dominated. And so I feel like what I've noticed as a woman in the industry is when you see other women in roles like hers, in high up leading roles, whether it's just on the legal side or just on the tech side or the combo, they tend to try harder to stand out in some sort of way. And a lot of times that is just, it comes off very poorly in my perspective, whether it's intentional or not. And she doesn't do that at all. She is just naturally honest, and she could be a complete psychopath. I don't see it, and I don't think so. But if she was, I mean, wow, she would hide that so well. But she's very humble and good at what she's saying.
Yeah, I mean, I met her at that conference and she and I were on that panel. And honestly, that was a great conference. It was a great panel because she and I, you know, and there's another person on it. It turned into just a really good dialogue and we had a lot of good banter. And it actually turned out really well because there was some good audience participation. And so it actually just turned into less of just a panel and more of a conversation. And so it actually was a really good session. And so she and I have stayed in touch. And so I was really excited when she said she could be on.
Yeah, she's very likable because you feel like what she's saying is her honest opinions. And that's on our podcast, sometimes, you know, we're trying to stay non-biased at all points. But sometimes, you know, we're too true to, I'm sorry, I have to say how I feel because I'm not biased. And with her, I didn't feel like she was holding anything back. And yet everything was stated in a very elegant manner. So just, you know, everyone who's listening, who just is like, is Laura just a fangirl for Fiona Campbell? It turns out, yeah, I think I am. So shout out to her, but shout out to eDiscovery and the industry in itself and all the changes. If you want to come on and talk to us about something that you think is actually exciting about e-discovery, or you've had an experience that was really traumatic for you and you think others would be traumatized as well, we definitely want to hear about that, especially if the trauma was related to e-discovery, because that's crazy. So let us know, talk to us, and come on the show. You can reach us at contact@thattechpod.com. If you haven't already, please make the right choice for yourself, for us, for others around you, and support an amazing organization called That Tech Pod by heading on over to our website at www.thattechpod.com. Enter your email to subscribe, check out everything that is going on, grab yourself a shirt or a mouse pad or whatever makes you feel, you know, sexy and good, because you are sexy and good, and we appreciate you. If you want to talk to us on a public forum to tell us how great you feel, please head over to linkedin.com/thattechpod or find us on any of our other social media platforms that we may or may not have.
And don't forget to go to wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, wherever, and you know, give us a 5-star review, let us know how we're doing, and you know, tell your friends. Anything you can do to help us get out there is always appreciated.
Thanks, everyone.
See you.